Okay, I think we're back on.
I think so.
Okay, I'm on education policy.
Mm-hmm.
Education policy was a policy that needed to be done by the tribal government, wherein we can state how we feel Navajo education should be in the future, and that culture, history, language, life, Navajo lifestyle, the Navajo way of life, including the retention of the clan system and keh, those are all important to the survival of the Navajo Nation. And we shouldn't lose it. We should enhance it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to do it is with the young children, the young Navajo people, and that we're going to mandate the schools that they should teach the language. They should teach Navajo culture, Navajo history. And that is a good beginning. It's a good start with the young people. And so we did that. We did that. And we also knew at the time that this is an instrument that could be used by a lot of folks that are in education, whether that be the federal government or state government or other tribal governments, that it was a model education policy. And it was a statement of desires, statements of belief by the Navajo people in education. Certainly a continuation of what Chief Manuelito said years and years ago when he talked to the Navajo people about how he felt about education, and that it was time for Navajo to embrace fully the education of the white people. And I think at the time what he had in mind was the Navajo people getting and gaining knowledge about the work of the non-Indian people, and that we need to know how they come to certain conclusions and all of that, and that you just can't continue fighting somebody that you don't understand.
That's right.
And yes, we may not like many of the things that they do, but why do they do it? And we need to understand them. And to do that, we got to have an education. So we got to send our kids to learn more about the white man's way of life, and that's to go to school. And so, from the Navajo side, it was really a policy that states the obvious, which was that we need to tell the world how we feel about education and how we view education, and that we want our children to remain in school and get the education that they deserve. And so that was why we did what we did. And education policy also was not cast in stone, that when time goes by, it has to be changed to reflect the growth of the Navajo people in education. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the Navajo Nation this past 2 years, 3 years ago, passed another education that replaces that. And not completely throwing away the old Navajo education policy, but really to update it.
Mm-hmm.
And to enhance that. And the way I put it is to put it into second gear.
Mm-hmm.
We had the truck running in first gear, and 3 years ago it was a matter of shifting to the second gear because of all the process that has taken place in the area of education.
Mm-hmm.
So that was education policy. On the Navajo, we have a large area to cover. We also have many, many Navajo children out there that needs to go to school, that should be in school. Somebody told me the other day that we have something like 72,000 students, Navajo students, of school age. That means from kindergarten all the way to Navajo students that go to graduate school and they become doctors. Those are people that are of school age, and that's a huge group of people, and they go to these different schools, like the public school, the contract schools, and then the grant school. They also have mission schools. Then they still have some boarding schools on the Navajo Nation. And then you have schools that are run by the state adjacent to the Navajo Nation with a high population of Navajo students. And they weren't all following the same policy. Each of those six schools had their own policy, but they really didn't consider what the Navajo wishes are. And I'll give you one good example. One of them was the mission school. Mm-hmm. The mission school were really only interested in their own denominational agenda. And so they promoted that. But what education policy is supposed to do is not to completely replace that, but to supplement that in some way and say Navajo culture is also important. The language is also important. Mm-hmm. And so the result of that questions that were raised by those local educational agencies was to refer them to the statement and the education policy. And so that all these six different kinds of school on the Navajo could follow that. Somebody also told me that there's something like 240 schools, physical schools. These are federal schools, public schools. Those are facilities that are out there. And Navajo schools also employ a large number of Navajo people as well as the non-Indians. Mm-hmm. So education on the Navajo is a big business, and you have to deal with it that way from the tribal government side. You have to look at it as a big business, because food has to be given to those students. Buses have to be obtained by the local school boards. There's a lot of things that they generate business-wise in the community. And so school becomes a big business on the Navajo, and you have to look at it as such. And we try to do things in such a way that education policy would pull all of that together, or at least bring about an understanding from the community what that was all about. That was something that I believe the education policy, at least the way we viewed it, was supposed to resolve those issues. So that's something that the Navajo people face at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think it goes back into the history of the Indian people, where to me, way back years and years and years ago, before the coming of the white man, Navajo people, as well as other Indian people, were living in certain ways with certain values. They had their goals and they had their aspirations, and they were self-sufficient. They were doing things on their own. And then all of a sudden, white man came to this country, and they began looking at the land. They began looking at all of the other resources that the Indian people had. And I guess the question was, the Indian people are always in the way of our progress. Mm-hmm. We wanted to branch out into these different areas and increase the land base that we have. And we need to go out there and claim the land. And the Indian people, the Navajo people, what they were doing simply was protecting their own turf. They were protecting their land base. And they did that in the name of their children and growth of the tribe. And the non-Indian people on the other side did not really see it the same way. They said that we need to expand. We need to follow this manifest destiny to the letter and be able to achieve those things that we want to achieve in terms of grabbing the land as much as we can while we can. And so basically the two opposing view clash, and Indian people had to be gathered and taken to a certain imprisonment camp in my book to convince us that we should go to one place here in the United States, and that's where Indian world, Indian country is going to be. Mm-hmm. And so the Navajo was no exception. Mm-hmm. The Navajo people were taken to Fort Sumner in New Mexico, some 400 or 500 miles away, and they were taken on a long walk where many of them died along the way, young children, women that were pregnant and they couldn't walk anymore were just shot to death, people that had broke out with sores on their feet because some of them didn't have any shoes. They were just killed. And so it was such a devastating period in the history of the Navajo people. And but since there were so many of us, we managed to survive. And when we managed to survive, we signed a treaty at the end of a 4-year period with the federal government, because the Navajo people didn't want to be taken all the way into Oklahoma. And so they decided that they should just start negotiating as to looking for something that would take them back to their home, original homeland, back in the Four Corners area, here in Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah, and a little of Colorado. And so they negotiated a deal. They weren't so much concerned about how big a land or how small a land they were getting. According to some of my friends, older friends and relatives, they wanted to leave the size of the reservation until a later date. Mm. So they went back to this 3 million acres of land, mm-hmm. only 3 million acres of land, and they said that, okay, we'll go back to that area. But as years went by, they branched out into different areas beyond that 3 million. And so they told the federal government, we're just simply going back to before the long walk period to the land that we used to occupy. And so from the year 1868, for the next 120, 130 years, we have increased our land base from a tiny 3 million acres to now almost 17 million acres of land today. And we're still buying land because we saved money and put money into trust called Land Acquisition Fund. Mm-hmm. It's now holding almost 50 million. And that money will be used to buy additional land. So we're not finished. We're not finished, and we're going to continue buying a lot of those land back. And so when they signed a treaty, they were allowed to go back to the Navajo Nation. And one person, there were many, many Navajo leaders. Barbancito was one of them. Ganado Mocha was one of them. Chief Manuelito was one of them. Mm-hmm. And Chief Manuelito and his wife, Juanita, they were just a visionary leaders between those two. And I say his wife because his wife also had a lot to do with Manuelito was governing the Navajo people in his area. And since we're on education, it was Chief Manuelito who said, we got to send our kids to school. And that's the only way. That's something that we absolutely need to do. And he said it at the time that education was not popular.
Right.
Many Navajo people did not want to send their children to school because of what the white people did to them. But Chief Manuelito says, listen, there's more of them, less of us. And it seems to me that we should try to understand the situation that we're in. And the way to go about it is getting our children educated. So I for one, also really, really believe in that. And the reason why I believe in that is that if you look at all of the other Indian nations, other Indian people, they had famous American Indian leaders. Sitting Bull is one of them. Red Cloud is another. Chief Joseph. You have Geronimo. You have Elsa Say for the Apache, White Mountain Apache. And you have all these Indian leaders that had to negotiate a deal with the federal government. But many, many of them were so stubborn that they didn't want to come off their basic belief. And as a result, they clashed with the federal government. In the process of clashing with the federal government, they got so angry at one another that neither one of them were able to give in. And as a result, many of the Indian tribes lost much, much, much of their land. Maybe because of the attitude of either themselves or their tribal leader. Navajo, to me, the Navajo people took a different, mm-hmm. a different approach, mm-hmm. which was we should negotiate while we can.
Mm-hmm.
And not worry so much about the details of the agreement. All we need is something that could take us back to our original Navajo land. And once we get back over there, we'll increase our land base. We'll do all these other things that mm-hmm. we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, they were so lucky. They were so lucky that they got sent back to their original homeland.
Yes.
I can't say the same thing about other Indian tribes
mm-hmm.
because they were relocated to different areas than where they wanted to be.
Right.
And so one has to think about what is it that these older people, the Navajo leaders at the time had that convinced them and persuaded them that they should do the thing that they did. And it's because of their leadership. It's because of their vision
mm-hmm.
that we now have the biggest land base of American mm-hmm. Indian tribe in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And one just has to look at the ability and the vision that they had back then to do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure the current leaders could have done the same thing. So basically, I think this is where we should end mm-hmm. our conversation. Then tomorrow, go into the discussion on the general education and what happened, why we do some of the things we do today.
Okay.
Good.